Well, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, this is another episode of Radio Fishing. And behind the mic is Captain Andrew Merriman. Over here in seat number two, we got Steve the Peg Leg Pirate. And seat number three, we have the publisher of the Waterline Weekly magazine, Mr. Josh Olive.
Don't forget that I'm the fish coach.
Yes, he is the fish coach, too. We can't forget about that.
You can't forget that part.
Would you like to kind of delve into that a little bit, seeing that you
fish
did have
coaching?
To bring it up?
Yeah, well,
before
I
we get
I,
on our actual topic.
I guess I could, but I'm actually going to take you to the topic through fish coaching.
Awesome.
Because I get a lot of questions from fishermen in general, and it kind of started with being the publisher of the magazine, of course, and working here in the shop, so people assume that I know a bunch of stuff. It works out really well that I kind of do know a bunch of stuff. I don't know everything. I'll never claim to, but I do know a bunch.
Yeah.
And one thing that I know for sure, this is an easy one. People ask me, where's the whitebait? How can I go out and find whitebait right now?
Yeah,
I can't find any whitebait. I'm having a hard time finding whitebait. What do I do?
It is a commonly asked question this time of year. Cause
you know what to tell them just as much as I know what to tell them.
Pretty much, which is
cut it out.
Far between.
You don't need whitebait
this time of year. Leave them alone.
What are you doing? You know,
they get the stories, they hear everybody referring to whitebait this, whitebait that, we got them on whitebait, where's the whitebait at? And especially when you have newcomers to the area that come down here and all they get told the whole time they're here is you can't do it without whitebait. So,
right. All of which is completely wrong.
Yes,
fishing with whitebait can be very productive when there's a lot of whitebait around, which is mainly to say in the summertime.
Yeah.
Right now, you can find whitebait. You're going to work real hard for it. And mostly you're going to end up wasting your fishing trip because you're so focused on finding whitebait that you're busy catching bait instead of busy fishing.
Exactly. And you said it's more prevalent in the summertime. That's if you're lucky. If we get one of those bad years where the water's weird or the salinity's bad, whatever the case may be, like this previous summer we had where it wasn't very prevalent when everybody was expecting it to be. So you kind of got to do it. Trial by fire, so to speak.
Right, yeah. But, you know, as bad as whitebait was in the summertime over this year, it's so much worse in winter. I mean, you're just going to knocking yourself out trying to find the stuff, and it's totally not necessary. You'd be much better off going to the bait shop, getting yourself a couple of dozen shrimp, and going out and fishing with that.
All right. So,
Just to add to that, I go fishing to enjoy it, not to aggravate myself where I don't even want to fish because I can't find whitebait.
Yeah.
It's not the magic answer to everything. Whitebait is not the cure-all. There's a way better ways to catch fish in the wintertime than whitebait.
Right. And shrimp is going to be a number one, don't you think?
Absolutely,
yeah.
Without a doubt.
All right, so seeing that each of us has got our own preferred bait, let's go around and see who likes what for what reason. All right, Steve, what do you like?
My favorite bait in the wintertime is going to be a crustacean. And my theory on that is I want to fish with what's the most available because these fish are going to look for what's most available. It's match the hatch. It's not rocket science. I mean, if you got 4-to-1 ratio of shrimp versus white bait in the harbor, shrimp's going to be the number one thing. And another factor is these fish are lethargic in the wintertime. They don't want to burn up precious calories chasing anything. So a shrimp is not a fast animal. It's not going to run from them very fast, so it's an easy meal. And so that's just my little take on that, and I'll let Josh give us some more of his wisdom on the subject. But
well, and I'll go to the same thing. If I'm going to use a natural bait in wintertime, it's probably going to be a shrimp. Not necessarily because it's the only thing that fish are out there eating. Yeah, there's a lot of shrimp out there, but I mean, think about all the different things that fish eat. There's so many choices.
Well, they're opportunity feeders.
I mean, go out there with a dip net on the flats and see what you find when you start dipping through that grass. It's not just shrimp, which you will find, but you're going to find all kinds of little crabs. You're going to find various different species of fish.
I actually got to experience
that. There's so many different
things. We actually went out and did the sea net and kind of picked a random area and dropped the nets and actually went through and counted the how many different species there were and how many of each we pulled with each pull of the net. So it was different. So it gives you kind of a better perspective as to actually what those fish are eating on a day-to-day basis.
And every one of those little things out there, if it fits in their mouth, guess what? It's fish food. So they're not nearly as picky as we are about the baits that we use when they get to what they're eating. So I use a lot of artificials. I mean, I do use shrimp when I'm using natural bait, but artificials, this is the time of year for them because There's not a lot of white bait out there that are easy for them to get. They're not being chummed heavily like they were in summertime, so it's a little bit harder for them to find something to eat. They're more willing to take something that's fake. So going out there and throwing a variety of soft plastics, and I use a wider variety than most people do. I use everything from little tiny minnow imitations up to great big bass worms, you know, because there's stuff out there that looks like all those.
So you've got a good idea as to, you prefer the artificials this time of year, and you like, how do you like doing? You like using a heavier setup, a lighter setup, whether you're on a boat, wade fishing, how do you break it up and go through that wide array of baits that you're going to carry with you during this time of year?
Right. And just like the wide array of baits, I have a wide array of tackle too. Most of my inshore fishing is done with something like a 6 to 14 pound rod and 10 pound test braid. If I'm getting out onto the open flats and I'm wade fishing, I'll go a little bit lighter. I have one rod that I carry with me when I do that. It's got 4 pound nanofill on it. Really light stuff. I can do that this time of year because I don't worry too much about longer fights. Water's cooler, has more oxygen in it. Fish are much more likely to survive a long fight. Now, on the other hand, if I'm getting up against the mangroves or over by the docks, I don't want to give the fish that advantage on me. So I'll fish with 10-20 pound rod with maybe 20 pound braid on it, just so that I have a little bit of extra oomph, pull that fish away from structure. Yeah. But most of the time, 6 to 14 with 10 pound line.
So are you like the rest of us Florida folk? Are you are a Floridian, you're been here your whole life, correct?
Oh yeah.
All right, so you're not very keen on, you know, dipping your toes in the water and wade fishing this time of year, are you?
Absolutely.
Oh, you do?
Absolutely.
Like it. Oh, you like cold weather.
Well, I have a little bit more insulation than you two scrawny little weenies do, so it doesn't bother me quite as much. But you know what? What I've found about wade fishing is that it gives me an opportunity to get in close with fish, to be able to sneak up on them that I don't otherwise have, even from a kayak. It's just amazing how much closer you can get
to
fish.
So you get you get a closer proximity to the fish, and you get a much quieter presentation rather than trolling motor up or drifting in and clanging the anchor and throwing it out or jamming a sticket pin in the sand.
Even with a sticket pin. I mean, a sticket pin makes noise when you push it into the water.
Sound echoes underwater.
It does, a lot. I mean, trolling motors, they sound quiet to us. They're not quiet to the fish.
Yeah.
You know, push pole, that's quieter, but still not really that quiet. Plus, you have hole slap and water hitting up against your boat. You're making way more noise than you think you are. So being able to approach redfish, especially this time of year, closely, it just is not easy from any kind of vessel. So anchor it, go over the side, and literally when you're walking up to fish, it's amazing how much less scared they are of you. I mean, I've had occasions where I've stood still and had a redfish dig underneath my wading boot to dig a crab up out of the sand.
Wow.
Talk about close encounters.
Yeah.
At least there wasn't a bull shark doing that.
Well, and you do find some of those too, but most of them are around 2 to 3 feet long. So, you know, I don't worry about them too much most of the time.
Right. So those are kind of couple of things you like doing, ways you like doing them. Steve, this time of year, what is your preferred bait? And
well, I definitely go back to what Josh said, and everything I lighten it up this time of the year because I'm fishing more open water, so it gives me that opportunity to use the lighter line and the less terminal tackle and the smaller rods and reels and things like that. And I even believe it goes to even the clothing that you wear. As we all know, these birds here prey on fish, and these fish have been eaten by birds since they were an egg. I try to avoid black clothing. I don't want anything that's going to look like a shadow. Unlike Josh, you know, being a one-legged man, wading's not my thing.
So your preferred boat most of the time?
Yeah, I'm pretty much in the boat.
I may have spaced it there for a second. I'm trying to reach my water.
Okay.
What is your preferred bait that you're using?
Anything that I can work slow. Shrimp, of course, being live bait, that's going to be my weapon of choice on my live bait. On my artificial stuff, and I like to use gulp. I'm a gulp fan. I like the 3-inch new penny gulp in this water. I don't so much do the paddle tails as I would a jerk shad or something that I can work slower, because then, you know, again, it goes back to, I believe that the fish are more lethargic in cold water. They're just not going to eat those big meals as often as they do in the summertime. But, you know, my preferred lure, again, is gulp. Light tackle, 8 to 16 rod, 7.5 foot, 3,000 reel, 15-pound braid, 20-pound leader, fluorocarbon, of course, 3 foot long. And again, I use a line to line knot. That's another piece of terminal tackle that I can do away with that swivel. And in the wintertime, I simplify everything. Do as light as I can get away with, because I am fishing more of that open water stuff versus the structure. You know, and just elaborating on what Josh said, it gives me that opportunity to use my lighter tackle and to get a fight out of the fish. And, you know, it's just that's my wintertime tactic.
So we've got a couple different ideas. We've gotten Josh prefers wade fishing. He gets his quieter presentation. He prefers the open water fishing this time of year.
Well, I would be out there wade fishing with Josh, but metal and salt water.
Yeah, they don't mix. They rust pretty quick.
It rusts pretty quick, and that gets expensive. So
when you do it, do we call it hop fishing?
It could probably be hop fishing.
Now, see, I'm a little bit different when it comes to that, because I'll do a little bit of both. I don't like the cold water as much as Josh does, but I will do some wade fishing. I will do fishing off the boat, and I will go in between. I'll still fish shrimp, cut ladyfish, and I'll transition over, say, you know, I'll use that for reds, but if I want to go over and I want to start catching trout, I will fish smaller rods and reels, smaller line class, light leader. Sometimes I'll go a little bit longer on a leader. So I'll go back and forth between the two. Now, I apply the same thing as far as my cut bait this time of year. It's kind of the same way you would winter or summertime. You know, you have those fish that aren't really want to go around and hunt bait and burn up extra energy. They're just pretty much looking for an easy meal. I mean, and summertime's the same way. That water's hot. Those fish are lethargic. In addition to during the summertime, that water clarity is not great. So you're going off of scent more than you are sight and sound. What's your take on that, Josh?
Well, I will say, you know, talking about water clarity, fluorocarbon is necessary
this time of year.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I use fluorocarbon almost all the time. I use monofilament leader only if I'm fishing in unlighted areas after dark or in really, really murky water. Fish are going to be a little bit spookier. And you talked about using smaller baits. Smaller baits are great because that you have a much more subtle presentation. But I'll tell you something, they're not always the right way to go. Every fish species that we have here is affected by cold weather differently. You know, trout, they seem to be okay with cold. Flounder, they're okay with cold. Not really a surprise if you look at where their ranges go. Those fish can be found all the way up the Atlantic coast. You know, they get into water that's much colder than what we have here. Whereas snook and tarpon, you know, they're at the north end of their range here. So they're going to be really, really slow when the water starts to get cold. Redfish seem to be a little bit kind of in between. You know, they don't seem to like the cold quite as much as some other species, but they don't seem quite as bothered by it. So the one thing I'll tell you is that if you're going after trout, and especially if you want to catch the bigger ones, sometimes sizing up your lure can really help. You know, I used to use the little DOA 3.5 inch bait, 3.5, whatever size that is, almost exclusively when I was trout fishing. And then one day I didn't have the little 3-inch paddle tail in the color that I wanted, but I did have a big old 5-inch jerk bait. And I said, well, I really wanted to use this color, but I don't have it. I'll just try it. So I started throwing that bait and I started catching trout, but they weren't the smaller trout that I had been catching. They were bigger fish. You know, they were close to about 20 inches average. And I said, well, this is different. This isn't what I thought I was going to get. So,
well, it's kind of like bass fishing. You go out there throwing the biggest lure you can, expecting a big fish, and you end up catching a bass that's, you know, only a half inch bigger than the lure you're throwing.
Right. So. Right. Yeah. And I realized later on that trout will eat surprisingly large things. And one of the things that I do sometimes, not all the time, but when I'm out there really wanting to get the bigger trout, I'll throw a hoagie. A 10-inch white hoagie out there.
Now, are you?
It looks like a little ladyfish.
Reading it. How are you rigging that as far as that goes when you're throwing those?
I usually just nose rig them. Just nose hook it like I would a ladyfish because I want it to basically swim. I want to have as much motion out as I can. Usually, yeah. Usually just a small J hook.
Free floats through the middle of the water column rather than floating or sinking?
Yep.
Okay, so this time of year, you have your preferred species. You have your method you're going to go about them. Now, your method may change a little bit by location, but where is your... What are you looking for in a location to look for? You know, I keep saying look for, but...
What do I look for when I look for a location
exactly.
to look for?
And you're looking for fish.
Well, I do look for fish, but fish can be hard to look for. So sometimes looking for a location that's easier to look for...
I say look for a lot.
It can be easier.
Andrew, are you looking for something?
I'm looking for answers.
Okay.
All right.
Well, our tides during the winter are generally lower. So a lot of the fish that would normally be up underneath the mangroves now are not underneath the mangroves. They're going to have to be someplace else because they don't have the water to get to where they were in the summertime. So you can look at places like creek mouths. A lot of our creek mouths are pretty much the same depth as the water around them, but a lot of them aren't. If they have good flow, there's going to be a deeper spot there. Sometimes there's even a channel that runs well out into the flat from that creek. If you can find spots like that, those are almost always fish holders, because when you think of structure, don't just think of big things, think of little things. And out on the flats, a little thing like a 4-inch depth change that drops off rapidly,
be pretty dressed.
That's amazing structure.
Yeah. And guys, all these fish that we're talking about, yes, they will eat white bait, but it's not their preferred food. And, you know, again, we're getting back to that white bait thing in the wintertime. It's leave them alone. Don't frustrate yourself trying to find them. It's just not the preferred method.
Yeah, I mean, a fish will eat a white bait if it happens to swim past in the wintertime.
Right.
But the white bait are a lot fewer. It's not what they're expecting. It's not what they're keyed in on like they can be in the summertime. So, you know, don't knock yourself out. Don't go crazy. A pinfish, if you really want to use a fish for bait, pinfish works great.
Yeah, they'll still eat them just the same as a white bait. But,
what is your feel, guys, on fishing for snook this time of year in general? I mean, and I'm not looking for a right or wrong answer. My opinion is I don't do it. And my reason for that is because it's cold, and cold affects snook, and I leave them alone. And not that there's a right or wrong answer, that I would beat up anybody that does fish for them this time of the year. That's just trying to get other people's general ideas on fishing for snook in the wintertime.
Well, you know, I've been influenced by Robert Lukowitz a bit on this. He's not a huge fan at all of targeting snook when it's out of season.
And northern, that's why I brought it up. I don't fish for them in the wintertime. I just don't.
But I don't fully agree with him. There are days that I wouldn't go after snook. Days like the day that we're having right now. Temperature's dropping out there. It's going to be cold tonight. The fish are going to be stressed already. Yeah, there may be some snook out there. They may even be actively feeding. But they don't need to be pulled out into 40-degree air and then held up for pictures and then put back down into the water. That's a shock to their system. It's unnecessary. There's lots of warm days that I can fish for snook and not worry about, you know, putting that shock to them when I catch them. So if they're not stressed during winter, we're having warm temperatures, doesn't really bother me that much.
Okay.
But again, the way that I'm going to fish for those fish is a little different than the way other people are going to fish for them. I'm not going to use treble hooks. I'm not going to use hooks that have barbs on them. So I'm fairly confident that I'm not going to do a whole lot of damage to him. But well, that's whether it's
that's kind of my take on it. I mean, when you're fishing those fish, whether it's 40 or 98, I mean, the goal is to make sure that that fish is capable of swimming away. I mean, that unless he's going in the ice box and I know that fish is lethal and I'm taking him home, I'm going to treat those fish, making sure that I'm not overfighting them, wearing them out, loosening the drag and laughing at how much my drag's squealing. I'm going to make sure I get that fish to the boat. I get the hook out accordingly. I'm not picking him up vertically, you know, with head in air and tail facing down.
You know, nobody can see your hands when you do that on the radio, Andrew.
Yeah, I was getting there, Josh, but he does kind of keyed in on it.
Yeah.
But yeah, the biggest thing is whatever the weather is, you know, it's still going to be making sure that that fish gets back in the water almost the same way it came out, just making sure he's got a better chance of swimming away alive.
Yeah, and that's always got to be the goal, because even during snook season, you know, I might kill one, maybe two fish in a season. You know,
yeah.
I'm not out there. That's not my goal, to catch a fish
right.
to kill it. You know, I mostly catch and release.
I think you guys would agree with me that, all in all, white bait is a natural resource, and it can be depleted. Do you guys feel that we overfish it?
Yes.
Wholeheartedly.
I agree, and that's where I was going with that. What could there be done to maybe get a net and close season for white bait? Or would that be a good idea, or is that something that could be looked into? Or
well, I don't know if a closed season would be the way to go about it, but, you know, I wouldn't be opposed to a bag limit on white bait. You know, guys go out and they use...
Would they do it by pounds or...
Do it by number.
By number? I mean,
actual count?
Yeah. Actual count?
Your bag limit on mullet, no matter what size they are, whether they're 4 pounds a piece or 3 inches a piece, little finger mullet, is 50 fish per person.
Right.
Yeah.
So why can't you do the same thing with whitebait?
Now, the numbers have drastically changed. I mean, do you know the actual statistics,
Well, not,
Josh?
Not to cut you off, but on that subject, I know I've only been here a couple years, and I know from talking to other people that the whitebait used to be, you could walk across it was the personification. There was so much out. I don't see that. So is that something that's changed recently within the couple years I've been here? Or when did you guys see a decline in that being here all your life?
It's been a pretty steady decline, kind of the same with the mullet. It's been what I would call a downward spiral, kind of. It's almost like a roller coaster in that it goes up and it goes down and it goes up and it goes down, but it's a roller coaster that's headed downhill.
Yeah.
So.
And if they do deplete or they don't come back here, that's definitely going to affect our fishing, right? I mean, it's going to affect our species, our quality of fish, and
chain reaction.
When you look at whitebait, think of them almost as almost like a fast food for fish.
Okay.
It's a high calorie food that they burn through quickly when they need a lot of energy. That's one reason why snook gets so keyed in on whitebait during the spawning season. They need a lot of energy. They're out there to reproduce. You know, they certainly do eat other things when they're out there on the beach doing that. They'll suck down a whiting or a ladyfish if it comes by. But they're preferring whitebait because it's high in oil, it's high in quick calories that they can turn around.
Gotcha. Kind of like a bear before he goes to hibernate.
Kind of like, yes. So when you take that food source away from them and you force them to change to something else, the other thing isn't going to have the same energy content, you know? So maybe the fish will be less successful at reproducing. I don't know. I mean, finding out answers to stuff like that, that's the kind of stuff that keeps ichthyologists
unfortunately, we have to see the consequences when we do it, and we have to see what happens after it's gone.
The problem is that we won't see the consequences.
Until it's too late.
Well, because we're so used to getting used to new things.
You know, I got
everything
you.
Becomes the new normal, you know?
Right.
If you take a fisherman from 20 years ago on Charlotte Harbor, and you brought him into the future right now, and you sent him out there in the water, he's going to go out there, and he's going to come back and tell you that things are just horrible. It's the worst thing that could possibly have happened. He's not finding anything out there. All of his spots are dead. His grass is all gone. He doesn't know what's going on with this. But for us, in the future, from his perspective, everything seems okay.
I got you.
You know? We've just gotten used to this as the new normal. And the same thing will happen by the time, you know, we get 4 or 5 years in the future and the stuff that we're talking about may have come to pass. We'll just accept it as the way it is.
True.
It's just the way it goes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, that kind of going in, we were talking about no real need for using whitebait this time of year. So, I mean, if that helps any way, shape, or form on, you know, giving those guys a break, like we're talking about, there's plenty of ways this time of year that you can go about catching fish without having to beat yourself up and go out there and beat the whitebait up.
Absolutely.
Well, I myself like to do different things anyway. I would bore the hell out of me to fish with whitebait every day, or, you know, I'm not out there just to catch fish. I like to learn different things and different tactics and different ways to do things and add different things to my arsenal. That whitebait thing with me a couple times a year, is I'm good with it. I don't really fish with it a whole lot to begin with, so
yeah. I don't think that I've used more than a dozen whitebait in all the time that I've been fishing down here in Florida.
I've used a little more than that, but it's not something that I do.
You're not one of the guys that goes out there and blacks out 3 live whales just to use for chum.
No.
So. And I understand why those guys do that. You know, if you're a guide and you're pinning your reputation on people going out and catching 60, 80 snook in a day, you know, it's not easy to do that without that crutch of having the white bait and loading down the well and throwing out all those chummers. You know, and I understand it. At the same time, I think it's dead wrong.
Yeah.
I totally agree with you. I just feel like something needs to be done. I don't know what the answer is, but there's got to be one. We're going to deplete that natural resource if something don't change.
Yeah, and the problem is that it's monkey see, monkey do.
Right.
You know, if you are going out with that guide and you see it done that way, you think, okay, well,
then you're
going to
go do it
done.
Too, right?
I got to go get a net. I got to go get a chum bat. I got to start doing the same thing. This is how we catch fish. You know, and it was one thing when it was half a dozen guides out there doing it on a regular basis. But now it's 150 guides out there doing it, plus however many clients they've taught to do it.
Right.
Yeah.
That ain't good.
No. And I agree with you, Josh. I mean, we see it all the time. Somebody will go out with a captain, and one of the first things they want to do is come into the bait shop and buy a cast net and learn how to throw it.
Yep.
We see it all the time. I mean, that's one of the first things they'll want to do. Oh, show me how to throw a net because I got to get greenbacks. So, you know, it's something's got to give somewhere with that whole situation.
And I don't see it going away on its own. So one of two things will happen. either we'll deplete the white bait down to the point that it's no longer a sustainable thing to go out and fish that way, or we'll have some kind of limit on the bait.
Right.
I don't see any other option.
And I feel the same thing with the baby blue crabs. I feel that's kind of in the same category to me. I feel like there's got to be something done with that too. I really do.
Yeah, and blue crabs are a different topic for a different time.
True.
But, you know, I agree with you on that kind of stuff, is that we need to have common sense limits on this stuff. Most of us would probably adhere to those limits already. It's not going
right.
to limit what most of us would do. But it's like the same thing with the bag limit on permit out on the reefs. You know, up until a couple years ago, there was no bag limit on permit in federal waters. And guys would go out there, and most people would catch one permit to keep, or they'd just catch and release them like they always do. But you had some guys who went out there and just loaded the boat down with permit, come back in with 30 permit and hang them up on the boards.
Right.
You know, and guys like that, that are going to abuse the resource, that's why we have to have these regulations.
Well, and then another thing, we're teaching the next generation of fishermen to do the same thing. I mean, we're teaching the children and things that are coming up fishing that's the way you do it.
Anyway. Not just the children, but also all the people that are moving here all
right.
the time.
They
exactly. see how we do it, and like I said before, monkey see,
monkey
do. That's yeah. how it's done. All right, I can do that.
So we've pretty well, you know, talked about the situation with the whitebait as far as using it this time of year. Kind of getting back on the whole timing. One of the big things we always talk about as far as when we're talking about our methods or our tactics is the fact that it's a low tide. I mean, this time of year, the tides are a major thing. Tides are a major thing year-round to fish by around here. But can you kind of key in on that as far as why this time of year is...
Well, we mentioned
than,
that
we,
know,
did
we
brush
have some
on it
very low water this time of year. We have low water for a couple of reasons. Number one, the Gulf of Mexico is colder. Colder water contracts a little bit, so the water level naturally goes down just a little bit as it gets colder. Number two, we have a predominant north or northeast or northwest wind. When you have that, you're pushing water out of Charlotte Harbor. Look at the shape of Charlotte Harbor. You know, all the outlets are to the south.
Yes.
So in the upper harbor, that water gets pushed right out of there, and it can't build back in when the winds, say, progressively out of the north. So you take those two things together, and you get some extra low tides in winter. It's a bad thing, and it's an awesome thing.
At the same time.
Right.
Now,
right.
correct me if I'm wrong, is there any play into the tides as far as the position of the moon this time of year?
No.
Okay.
No, there's not.
So that's kind of folklore, so to speak. I mean,
yes.
a lot of people talk about saying that there's a certain point in the
axis,
moon phase
yeah.
that affects it to where you get lower tides because the moon's close to the earth this time of year. I mean... I just wasn't 100% on
that. If that were the case, you'd see that happening globally.
Yeah,
yeah.
Not just
worldwide.
In our...
Not just Charlotte Harbor.
Right. Yeah. So it's more about the position of the moon relative to the Earth rather than our distance from the moon. And the same with the sun. More
yeah.
about our position relative rather than distance.
So,
like I said, great and awesome and horrible and terrible. The horrible and terrible is if you have a boat that doesn't run through 6 inches of water, which is most people... A lot of the spots that are going to have really good fishing are going to be off limits to you for getting your boat into right now on some of those lower tides.
Yeah.
The awesome thing is you can go out there, you can actually see the bottom of the ocean. It'll let you know, does that creek mouth have a deeper drop off on it? You know, without actually having to go explore it on foot, you know, you can see it. If you have to see it from outside the bar looking with a pair of binoculars, you know what? You can still see it.
So can kind of get a mental image and map all that out in your head as to areas.
Great time to get your camera out and take pictures and,
yeah.
and
yep.
mark things on maps. And
so that way you have an idea during the summer months when you're fishing that same location where
you know
those
where
preferred
at.
Areas are at, where yeah. that structure at, the deep cuts, everything
right.
that you saw this time of year, you can go and fish during the summer months.
If you've ever wondered how somebody can just go out onto a flat and suddenly start finding fish, that's how. Because they've built that map, because they've seen all those places, because they know what's there.
All right. Well, I think we covered this time of year, and you guys kind of divulged on your tactics and tricks and tips that you use this time of year. Again, if anybody has any questions, comments, concerns, stop in and talk to any one of us, and we'll give you a rundown. I know a lot of this is the time of year where a lot of people come to visit. If you are one of those people that are out there listening and you're planning on making a trip down during the winter, stop in and talk to us. Again, behind the mic, it is Captain Andrew Merriman. Over here in seat number two, we got Steve the Peg Leg Pirate. And in seat number three, we have the publisher of Waterline Weekly magazine. And
the Fish Coach.
And the fish coach.
Yeah, don't forget his fish coach.
And the host of Radio Waterline.
And the host of Radio Waterline. I mean, he's a jack of all trades, so to speak. So
it's almost all the same trade, though. Yeah. So.
Well, it all kind of applies. So. All righty, guys. Thanks for listening.
Thanks, guys.